You know, I learned a lot of chants in Seattle, and one of them which has stayed with me was, ain't no power like the power of youth, because the power of youth don't stop. And one of the classic examples of that power of youth is the next speaker, a very dear friend, Danny Kennedy. Danny is somebody I met when he was an organizer with ACED, a student organization. He was kicking ass with the others around the World Bank and IMF issues. But today he is the director of Project Underground, a Berkeley-based organization, which has been challenging the human rights violations of the mining and oil companies. He's been out there, one of those activists who's linking up communities across borders, whether it's issues of what's happening to our communities of color, low-income communities in the U.S., as well as what's happening in the Niger Delta. So let's give a big hand to Danny.
Thank you very much, Anuradha, and thank you all for being here and getting involved. It's amazing to see this crowd. I helped organize a sort of a parallel event in 94 here in DC, and then the 50 Years is Enough stuff in Madrid in 95. And we were trying to mobilize internationally, but this time it's just slightly different. There's this spark in the air, and I think that we're going to really kick ass, as Anuradha's been saying, all morning in this church. I also want to thank the IFG very much for putting me on this panel. It's a great privilege to be on a panel with people that I've learned so much from over the years, not just about the woes of the global economy, but also about the possibility of an economy for people, for the common good, as Herman Daly wrote in a book of that title many years ago. These are wonderful places to go and inform yourself and educate yourself. And better than that, a forum like this that the IFG is now putting on like some sort of Billy Graham alternative impresario outfit is a place to also connect to the stuff going on the streets. You can get educated here and you can get activated out there on Sunday and Monday. And that's what we've all got to do, and I'll try and get you to practice some chants before the end of this little talk. I do also want to thank the church for hosting us and the Reverend for introducing us, and I want to apologize in advance for anything I might say. I will stick with the tone set by Anuradha, but sometimes we get carried away in the fury, the righteous rage that we have about these people that would take everything and would own everything and destroy the possibility of a just and sustainable future for us all. And we have to keep that passion and that fire in our bellies as we take this up with these decision makers this week. I also want to apologize to all of you a little bit, and it's a weird sort of thing I'm feeling. I'm embarrassed because I'm Australian, a sort of Australian-American now, a hybrid, and there's another Australian-American that you might have heard about or you should know about, and his name's James Wolfenson. And I know that's only a kind of guilt by association that I have, but it just makes me sick in the stomach to see a compatriot doing what this man's doing. I mean, you know, we're not just talking about psychologically warped, which he is. I mean, he should learn from that old Middle Eastern proverb that the denial ain't just a river in Egypt. This guy is seriously not just misguided, but evil. I honestly want to say that. I'm happy to try to demonize, even in a house of the Lord, individual decision makers that perpetrate wrongful acts knowingly, not ignorantly, but knowingly on people and places around the planet. I was in a cab the other day listening to NPR with a Ghanaian cabbie, and he and I both had to pull over because we were gagging, because Wolfenson was on NPR saying that, you know, he just doesn't understand what all the outrage is about, why all these people are coming to town. He said, we mobilize 10,000 people every day for social justice. That was the point when we had to stop the car. There are also lesser villains in this piece that I want you to know by name, and I think that we have to start to pressure and target, because the only thing that creates social change, as we've learnt from all of our forebears and all the movements that we build on and stand on the shoulders of, is endless pressure, endlessly applied. We have to personalise this. We have to hold the powers that be responsible individually. We have to speak truth to them through events like this, through the media, through all the forums we can, but we also have to take it up to them. That's why we want to stop the limousines in the street on Sunday. We want these officials, these elites from these countries that are coming to the JFK Center or wherever they plan to meet, to stop and hear the rage in our voices and reflected from around the world at the abuse of structural adjustment programs and the other policies of the World Bank and the IMF and the global corporate economy that we're suffering from. One of the names I'd like you to get to know is a name I only came across just last year. His name is Doug Lister. Fascinating gentleman, not really, actually he's quite boring in person. English educated, I would guess, from some fairly aristocratic background. And I met him at the International Finance Corporation, which is, as you know, the private sector arm of the World Bank. Has a very nice building down here in D.C. And you know, well-paid people walking around, mostly white, and deciding the fate of billions of people around the planet. And Doug's one of those people. And I asked him for his card after our meeting, which I'm going to tell you about. And I looked at his card, and his card said, Doug Lister, International Finance Corporation, Mining Oil and Gas. It didn't say Executive Director or Managing Director or Project Manager or any title. It just said Mining Oil and Gas. And that you know, got the fear of God going in me. It was kind of like, is this man human? Or is he just made of, you know, mining oil and gas? What is that about? What it's about is the fact that the World Bank is the largest funder in the public sector of fossil fuel projects around the world. The International Finance Corporation is nothing other than a direct subsidy institution for mining and oil corporations. You know the story that Daphne described with the Chad Cameron pipeline, which is one of the great outrages currently pending with the World Bank Board for decision. The money is going to ExxonMobil and the consortium of companies that will build that pipeline if they try. And ExxonMobil had a GDP 40 times that of Chad last year. It had a GDP 4 times that of Cameroon. So this is a corporation receiving largesse from the public purse, from your tax dollars and mine and raised through bond sales and all the rest of it, to subsidize this corporate malfeasance. This is an outrage which clearly we have to stop. That's not the International Finance Corporation. The IFC is even worse than the other wings of the World Bank, which only fund mining oil and gas to the tune of about 3-4% of their entire portfolios. The International Finance Corporation and its bastard brother, the Multilateral Investment Guarantee Agency, which insures private sector developments in the third world, have 16% of their portfolios occupied by financing and funding and organizing insurance for and other loans for holes in the ground. This is in the name of poverty alleviation. That's what the World Bank's about, right? A world full of poverty? No, a world free of poverty, I should say. That's what their slogan is. And yet somehow they think that holes in the ground, care of ExxonMobil, Chevron, Newmont, Freeport, everyone else that they've funded over the years, is a route to alleviate the problems of the people surrounding these projects. Of course, we know this is a lie. We know that they know this is a lie, that the contrary is true, that they will structurally impoverish those communities, that there is a poverty in geology and pursuing a macroeconomic development path which is based on resource exploitation, that the most indebted countries are predominantly countries which pegged their fate on resource exploitation, particularly mineral and oil exploitation. They know all this. Their own statistics bear this out, and yet they continue to perpetrate it. And in fact, the fastest growing portfolios, particularly in the IFC and the MIGA, which are the fastest growing areas of the World Bank's business, are to support mining oil and gas projects. The meeting that I was at in Washington last June to meet with Mr. Doug Lister, Mining Oil and Gas International Finance Corporation, was a meeting with a group of campesinos that we had brought up from northern Peru. These are indigenous people from the north of Peru who were subjected to the quest for gold that Westerners had 500 years ago. You might remember a spate of history under the conquistadors in which these indigenous populations thought that white people ate gold because nothing else could explain their desire and lust to get it. And now, 500 years later, in the very city where Atahualpa was ransomed for a room full of silver and gold to Pizarro, the conquistador, there is another conquistador, Newmont Corporation of Denver, Colorado, raping and pillaging that land yet again, this time with Latin America's largest cyanide-based gold mine. Now, you've only got to go to Romania or North Carolina or Colorado or Papua New Guinea in the last month to find out the problems with cyanide-based gold mining. This is the poison we used in Auschwitz, remember? We're now putting it on the ground all over the planet next to drinking water in order to extract tiny fractions of gold. That's the whole point of the cyanide extraction technology. It gets it out at like 0.003 grams per ton. So for every bar of gold, you get 3 billion bar equivalents of waste rock laced with cyanide from this process. The Newmont gold mine in northern Peru is the largest mining concession area in Latin America. And that is land that they intend and could literally grind up and turn into powder and spray with cyanide and extract these tiny fractions of gold from if they have their way. Get this, the World Bank owns 5% of it. They own 5% of it. They didn't just provide loans to set it up, which is their usual way of behaving. They didn't just arrange other private creditors to finance the expansion of the mine, although they did that as well. They actually own 5% of it. So we bought campesinos from the surrounding community, 60,000 of whom have been directly impacted by this, 10,000 of whom have been displaced by this mine. We bought representatives of their federation to meet with the IFC because the IFC had failed to meet with them ever before. They had never been consulted as an organization. And this Federation of Rondas Campesinas of Northern Peru is a constitutionally recognized indigenous organization in Peru. So it's not like they could have missed it when they did their social impact assessment. They have failed to talk to them in the 8 years that this mine's been operating. So we brought them here instead. And this man, the rather boring Englishman that does mining oil and gas for the IFC, he sat there impassively, hardly said a word, and hasn't got back to us since. We had two people, one a woman called Segunda Castrillon Vallejo, who is a remarkable leader of her community and just an amazing firebrand of an activist, who currently, unfortunately, is being charged with terrorism under Peruvian laws because of a protest that she was involved in on the road on the way to the mine and a previous incident where she hit the mayor of the local town on the head with her shoe because she was so upset by the whole thing. We're trying to get them legal advice to help get off that because it's obviously a very serious charge and just a small taste of the kind of repression that communities like this face all the time at the front line of these bank and fund-funded projects. But Segunda was passionate, very polite, but very strong. She stood up, she was crying, she was showing pictures of her land, which she had been told she could come back to after it had been mined, but which is now literally a gaping hole. Literally a pit, nearly, you know, hundreds of feet deep. Now, this was unmoving to these people. And so we have to move them. We have to represent Segunda on Sunday. Segunda has given us her blessing, and the Federation of Rondas Campesinos, though they won't be represented here, we are bringing them up for Newmont's annual meeting next month in Denver, have given the blessing of their efforts to the whole convergence here to try and take down the World Bank and the IMF because of the damage they do to their land. There's another community organization that I want to speak for, and again, I'm embarrassed to say this because I think people should speak for themselves, and I'm glad that the next set of speakers will be reports from around the planet, and you'll hear more directly from on the ground at the blunt end, the ugly cutting edge of the global economy. But there is a community network that we at Project Underwork with resisting oil exploitation and exploration around the world called Oil Watch. And they have also released a statement in commemoration and support of this historic moment here in DC, calling for an end to mining oil and gas investment by the World Bank immediately. Not tomorrow, not next week, not later, but now. And we need to respect these demands, and we need to put them and place them on the doorstep of the institutions and let them hear that. The reason we need to do this on the oil end of the game is because the World Bank, as I said earlier, is the largest funder of fossil fuel development in the public sector in the world. It's an amazing thing to think about. The figures that Daphne cited about the fact that they spend 25 times more on fossil fuel development and global warming creation, effectively, than renewable energy development is an abomination. It is truly disturbing and disgusting, and something which we have to correct. Later on, you'll be meeting tonight Oronto Douglas, who's here from Nigeria, who was a lawyer for the late, great Ken Saro-Wiwa, who raised the world's attention to the pillage of the oil industry in the Niger Delta. Oronto has at various times in the last several years had to live underground, quite literally, with a price on his head at different times. And he has organized and continued to work with the movement for the survival of the Ogoni people and a more broad pan-ethnic movement, including his own minority, the Ijaw in Nigeria, to start to shake the very foundations of that state, which was set up in the interests of the oil companies. Now, Oronto will tell you more about this, but another project which the bank may consider funding and has been currently denying that they're considering funding, but previously was considering funding, and we can't believe anything these people say, is a pipeline from Nigeria to Ghana with gas. It's called the West Africa Gas Pipeline, and the gas will fuel an energy system run by a US corporation, of course, in Ghana, which will basically provide energy to gold mines in Ghana. These gold mines are the same as the ones in Peru and the same as the ones in Nevada, destroying the lives of the Western Shoshone people, cyanide-based gold mines. And guess what? The World Bank's funding 3 out of 6 of them in the Ghanaian case. In West Africa, the fastest growing line item of IFC lending of late has certainly been in gold mining, which is a scourge going across the planet, which you can read more about in this paper, which I wanted to introduce just on my way to conclusion, which is to say that we're all here to shut down the bank, as far as I'm concerned, even if it's for a day, even if it's just to shake them out of their supine slumber, as it were, that, as Herman put it, to make them realize, wake up and smell the coffee, that things are changing. The exciting thing about this moment and the difference between now and previous years is the vitality and the energy which the young people bring, which the artists bring to this, which the creativity and humour that we're all using in this actually brings to the task of abolishing this institution. And I must say, you've probably picked me. I'm in the abolitionist end of the spectrum, right? It can't be reformed as an institution, I'm speaking of the World Bank, when at its very constitutional basis it requires that an American heads the bank. The president, James Wolfensohn, didn't change his nationality just to pay better taxes to the US government. He had to change it in order to take this position. That very fact, and the fact that the International Monetary Fund requires a European head, is racist. It is intentionally exclusionary. It is intentionally exclusionary to the majority of the world's population and the people whom these institutions claim to serve, but in truth, who they are hurting most. The people that these institutions serve are the CEOs and the shareholders and the investors and beneficiaries of corporate America, of corporate Australia, of corporate Japan and Europe. These corporations exert a disturbing level of influence and governance over us in our lives. There's a lot of talk in the United States about need for campaign finance reform and getting dirty money out of politics. At the global level, this global pillage instead of village that we've entered into in the 21st century, we really have a problem until we take down corporate rule. And the pillars of corporate rule are these institutions, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Trade Organization, which we threatened just last year. To learn more about it, I want you all to get this Washington Times called The Washington Minds that we put out yesterday. It explicates some of the issues that we work on at Project Underground, supporting the human rights of communities resisting mining and oil exploitation. Also, if you have internet access, check out www.worldbank.org, but not World Bank as in W-O-R-L-D, but World as in Whirling Dervish, the W-H-I-R-L-E-D bank.org. It's a satirical website where you can even play an interactive game and try with real macroeconomic figures to pay off the debt of a developing country of your choice. And you can slash all the public spending you like, you can slash all the education and health care that you want, and you can't do it because it's an impossible treadmill that those people are on, trying to pay off odious debts probably accrued by dictators in years before their kids were born, which is why we have this thing on the back. Got debt? This kid does. And lastly, before I go, I wanted to get you all up and practicing a little slogan which we created for the purpose of this week. It's, excuse me as I say this, World Bank, get your ass out of mining oil and gas. And what I want to propose is that I'll say the words World Bank, and then the top deck up there says, get your ass, and the bottom deck down here says, out of mining oil and gas. Okay? So it's World Bank, get your ass out of mining oil and gas. I'm giving that to the top group just in case there is a problem with saying ass in a church, so that you're closer to God. And this is good practice. This is good practice for Sunday, because I expect you all, regardless of whether you can join in the direct action or not, to be at the blockades, on the barricades, as these people run the gauntlet in their limousines, and as we speak truth to power and we tell them we will not have any more of this nonsense, that we want the bank's abuse and the funds abuse to stop. And in my case, I want you to learn this slogan. So we'll just do this five times in the interest of time. Okay, you've all got your lines down. All right. World Bank,
get your ass out of mining oil and gas.
World Bank,
get your ass out of mining oil and gas.
World Bank,
get your ass out of mining oil and gas.
World Bank,
get your ass out of mining oil and gas.
World Bank,
get your ass out of mining oil and gas.
Thank you.